This is David Saslov. Welcome to Voices and Views V2.0 on KGPR 89.9 FM. It's my great privilege and honor today to welcome to the studio Carrie Hill Parker and Morgan Jaegerlener. Carrie Hill Parker is Executive Director of Helping Hands and a former teacher in the Great Falls Public School District, and a longtime resident of Great Falls, and Morgan Jaegerlener is a board member of Housed Great Falls and a speech-language pathologist at Benefice. Morgan, Carrie, welcome.
Thanks for having us, David. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Carrie, we'll start with you.
Okay.
First, tell me a little bit about Helping Hands, what it is, how it got started.
Sure. So Helping Hands has been a ministry of First English Lutheran Church for about 40 years, probably about 40 years plus now. And it started off as a small food cupboard just to feed struggling members of the congregation. And over time, it has become a food pantry now that is feeding, well, last year we fed about 13,000 people and gave out about 70,000 pounds of food. So it has definitely grown some and has become more of a community hub, community center, rather than just specifically for the church.
That's amazing. And why do you think those numbers are so high? Why is the need so great in our community?
Well, there's a lot going on in Great Falls, as you know. There's a high level of poverty, specifically in the downtown area. The last census has marked that downtown community as a high area of concentrated poverty, is what they call it. So we have, you know, all of the accompanying issues of poverty going on downtown. We've got, you know, generational poverty, and folks are just struggling right now, particularly, I think, after COVID. The economy, as everyone knows, has been a little rough. Grocery prices have gone up, and people are just kind of hanging on. Those families that were before COVID, maybe just kind of hanging on by their fingertips, now are really struggling. And sometimes for folks, it's the choice between buying groceries that month or paying the rent.
So tell me how this plays out or why it matters to the average citizen who's not necessarily below the poverty line and taking advantage of Helping Hands services.
We believe that a community's health really can only be judged or based on the health of, you know, as Helping Hands is kind of rooted in a Christian belief because it was founded by a church. You know, it's all about the least of these, and we're really only as strong as the folks that are struggling the most or the weakest. And because of that, we believe that we really need to take care of one another. And that's honestly at the root of who we are and what we do at Helping Hands. We accept folks regardless of whatever situation or position they may be in, whatever demons they may be facing, whether it be poverty or addiction or physical or mental health issues. People are welcomed in warmly, and we believe in gospel hospitality at Helping Hands, where we accept people with what we call the extravagant love of Christ. And to us, that means you do not shove religion at people or demand people worship or participate in any sort of religious experience, but you welcome people unconditionally, fully, completely, and wholly, and make them feel welcome, respected, treat them with dignity. This matters to our community because we are facing really a crisis with poverty in Great Falls and housing in particular. And there are folks who would rather not look at that situation. And you know, we have, you know, some members of our community would rather not address this situation and would rather look the other way or are of the mindset that people should just pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And, you know, it worked for me and I worked hard my whole life, so why shouldn't they? Well, that mindset is not fixing the problem. It's not changing things for our neighbors, and it's not changing things for the larger community either. What's really needed is for people to jump in, recognize we have a problem, and work together for solutions. The way we're doing it now, and, you know, have been, and many other places around the country are doing it, you know, if you want to bring it down to dollars and cents, costs more, this sort of responsive approach rather than a proactive approach to poverty and homelessness and food scarcity. When we're trying to fix a problem after it's already broken, it's more expensive. We've got folks with mental health issues, with addiction, and what's happening is just there's you know, a high rate of recidivism where they're in jail, out of jail, in jail, out of jail. And we're of the opinion that, and there's been, you know, considerable research done here too, if we were to just take the resources we have and address the problem once and for all, specifically with the Housing First model, where we get people housed, treat the entire situation, the entire problem, address their issues, we'd actually save money in the long term. And, you know, again, that only strengthens our community.
I hear that. Yeah. And since we've broached now the topic of homelessness and the unhoused, Morgan, I'll turn to you and ask you to give me a little bit of the backstory on how Housed Great Falls came to exist and what this cold weather drop-in center is at the old First English Lutheran location.
Yeah, so Housed Great Falls was established in 2022 out of kind of a response to Great Falls' increasing homelessness. We recognize that, you know, there were lots of barriers and challenges, and there was not really a great fit as far as housing goes. Our first kind of steps in Housed Great Falls was to open kind of a cold weather drop-in center, open 5:30 to 9:30 on chilly nights with temperatures less than 32. We were at the United Methodist Church. We had to move over. Thankfully, Carrie opened the building with open arms for us, and so we didn't have any break-in services this winter after the pipes froze at UMC. We offer hot meal, snacks to go, some cold weather gear like hats and gloves. Really, it's a kind of harm reduction kind of model, or we would rather people have hats and gloves to not result in frostbite and stuff.
On the streets of Great Falls, you can die of exposure.
Yes.
And how will the next wave of housing or temporary sheltering look different from what we've seen in the past, which, as we know, seems to have been fairly problematic for most people in Great Falls? How is the next wave of, say, tiny homes, pallet sheltering? What do you envision as a way to address the immediate need in housing in Great Falls?
Yeah, so Housed Great Falls is planning on building kind of a 20-unit transitional tiny home community. It'll have on-site bathrooms, laundry, community space, potentially some garden space as well for people to grow and produce their own food. On-site case management and kind of like a wraparound care model.
That's wonderful. Now, what do you say to people who ask you the big W question of where?
To be determined. Yeah, we need at least a third of an acre of land, and it has to be zoned appropriately. So commercial zoning and multi-use zoning applies. So,
no, that makes sense. We definitely want to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed so that when we launch something like that for our unhoused community, they don't have to move suddenly or or go elsewhere from that location. And do we consider 20 to be the number of units that are needed? Or is that a first step in the water?
I think as far as House Great Falls goes, there's some potential other longer term things that we'd like to do. But as far as the transitional shelter, we'll start with 20 and see what we need.
It has to help. It can only help, I suppose, is one way to put it. Carrie, back to you. So talk to me about the intersectionality that you see between food scarcity and poverty relief and the homelessness problem and the housing availability problem.
Sure. It's funny. I was actually having this conversation with a friend the other day, you know, with food scarcity. Obviously, that's our primary focus at Helping Hands is feeding people. And we do quite a bit of that. Once you touch one area of poverty relief, it's a little bit like a spider web. You know, you touch one thread of that, and you can't but help touch other threads as well. And so we've recognized, obviously, that when you feed people, for example, you can't just give everyone a box of food and expect them to go home and put it in their freezer and have an oven to cook it in. So then we started to get more into working with homeless folks, and we came up with go kits for those people, which are, you know, easily accessible foods that they can eat on the go, hence the name.
Similar to the meals ready to eat concept in the military.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, although I like to think ours might be just a little better. I don't know.
Okay.
Nothing against our MREs. But
please give my apologies to the chef. It wasn't intended as a slam.
For sure. And then also, of course, we are working with a lot of folks who have either physical conditions or mental health conditions. Addiction is in there also. Sometimes a self-medicating sort of issue can happen. So what we've realized is there is just no one agency that can do it all, nor should one try. And that if there's going to ever be a solution to homelessness or true poverty relief, it's going to have to come from a community that is working together and caring together about one another. So Helping Hands has reached out to other agencies. We're so grateful to get to work with House Great Falls. And honestly, I think the cold weather drop-in is one of the best things to happen in Great Falls for some time, specifically with our unhoused population. I'm quite certain they have saved lives so far. I have no doubt in my mind. It's not common knowledge, but we've lost someone just about every winter, at least one person, to typically the cold weather, one unhoused individual. And, you know, I can't abide that. And I think that if any of us really just took a moment to think about what that actually means, no one could really stand for that. Particularly when you've met some of these people and you know some of their stories and they become friends. There are reasons that every single one of them is out there. And there is just no reason in our great country and in our great state and in this great community that anyone should be outside freezing to death. It's inexcusable, really. So having said that, again, with the community approach, luckily there are so many good people that are working towards this end of helping one another. We get to work with House Great Falls. We get to work with Indian Family Health Clinic, Alluvian, just so many different organizations have stepped forward to try to help and address this situation. We're now on the continuum of care with Opportunities Incorporated, and just this morning actually we met, and you know we get to talk about the people that we know who have obviously signed releases, and just kind of keep track of folks, where they are, what do they need, and how can we help.
the case management model that the continuum of care meets every month to discuss. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that each case is a name and an individual, not just a number on a docket.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, Morgan, back to you. The cost structure of providing temporary shelter for people is clearly on a different order of magnitude than the cost of providing meals on a regular basis to people. And the city clearly isn't considering any kind of unhoused levy of any kind. So it's not going to be part of the city budget. It's not going to be part of taxed monies that homeowners kick in. So what is the funding model for your project?
So private donations, applying to grants at the city, state, federal, private foundations, hoping to gain support from our local businesses as well, donations of in-kind work and materials. So.
And what kind of contribution levels do you need to make it to base camp, assuming that it won't all just get done on the sort of the NeighborWorks model where we build it ourselves?
Yeah, so if everything takes a dollar to build, the project is estimated at $1.5 million right now.
So. It's a tall hill to climb.
Yes.
But you're optimistic that we can get there with the citizens we have in place here in Great Falls?
I think we can do it.
I like that attitude. So talk to me a little bit about why that number actually is not so large when you think about the knock-on effects of doing nothing in this department. Why couldn't we all just do nothing and save the $1.5 million?
Yeah, so doing nothing costs our community more. You'll see your healthcare costs increase because people, if they have to stay in the cold and they go to the emergency room, emergency visit.
They don't get turned away from that.
No. If they do an inpatient stay at the hospital, it's $1,500 per night. If we lock them up in jail because they broke a window, because they want to get out of the cold. I don't know the exact cost of a night in Cascade County jail, but it's not cheap either.
Not to mention the cost of that window.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I get the sense that we're talking about an accumulation of cost, and not just to property and heating bills and jail maintenance costs, but I think about we're about to enter into a discussion citywide about our growth. Right, we know that the city is about to facilitate a citywide growth policy update forum. Mm-hmm. And I ask myself, well, if the end result is a growing and thriving city, that implies to me that people are going to want to move to Great Falls and be part of our community and make their homes here and raise their families here. My sense is that headlines about people dying of exposure on our streets is not good PR.
And when you think about Great Falls growth, you know, we have a housing shortage already with growth. Hopefully we can maintain our housing and grow it at the level of incoming people. But community rates of homelessness are directly correlated to the difference between cost of housing and income.
So the greater the disparity, the greater the unhoused community becomes. So Carrie, tell me, what is your message to listeners of Voices and Views, not just, let's say, the average homeowner, but also our elected officials and those who are vying to become our representatives in Helena next year? What do we need to change at the state level? What questions can our listeners go and ask of their candidates to find out if they're pulling in the right direction in this department? Do you have any good open questions we can ask?
That is a great question, David. And, you know, I think it really actually speaks to what it is that we want out of our community and, frankly, even who we are as a community. we are living in a broken world, if you haven't noticed. There is a lot of division right now. There's a lot of conflict. And it almost seems as though we're being pitted against one another. Republicans, Democrats, this one, that one. And really, we are only going to be healthy as a community if we're healthy as individuals. And the only way to really do that is to work together as a community for the health of everyone. So when speaking to our elected officials...
And candidates.
I would just implore them really to do the right thing and not always just toe the company line, but get to know some of the people who are living outside, some of the people who are living in poverty. You know, I wonder if some folks have spent as much time talking to the folks living in some of the, you know, Section 8 housing as they have campaigning in Fox Farm. Just a question. Not trying to be incendiary, but, you know, even the people who are standing on the corner are citizens. And it all comes down to who we want to be and what we want to stand for. Again, having said that, if you can't get behind that, it's costing our community money. And there are better ways of going about things than just putting people in jail over and over again. We need to, you know, speaking again to political elected officials and candidates, we really need to address the mental health crisis in Montana. There should not be waiting lists for people to get treatment who are unhoused and not in their and not well. That's a human right, and it really shouldn't be a matter of, you know, months, years for people to be able to get treatment for their illnesses. Again, if we can't get behind that for just reasons that it's the right thing to do, it puts us at risk. It puts the community at risk when we've got folks with mental illness walking around, and it does cost money for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned Section 8 housing. Do either of you have any solutions for how to fill some of the empty Section 8 housing units that we have in Great Falls?
Well, I know a lot of people on the continuum of care who are working on that problem right now. And it's funny, I was just talking to someone today after that meeting. More and more agencies are turning up for those meetings. And while at sometimes it seemed that we were just going through the list, now it seems like almost every agency has worked with one of the individuals. So they're knowing, they're getting to know the people who are needing help and stepping up to that.
Face to the name, as it were.
Face to the name, yeah. And, you know, the hope is that more and more people are getting housed, and I'm seeing that happen. It's not to say we don't have a problem, but people are really standing up and taking notice.
From what I hear, the state could be doing more to reimburse landlords for Section 8 housing vouchers. Right now, I hear that the rates are not keeping up with the median house price and the median rental rate, so that it doesn't make sense in our capitalist society for someone to accept a Section 8 voucher when they can earn more for the same unit on the open market.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that sounds to me like a problem that could at least be partly addressed at the state level if we had the right kind of representation and the right kind of lobbying going on in Helena.
Absolutely. And again, it comes down to our priorities. Who are we and what is it that we expect of one another? You know, it came to my attention that we had, I believe there were millions, was it $1.2 million that the state turned away earlier this year that was earmarked for feeding hungry children. So
That doesn't sound like something we should be bragging about, for sure.
It really does not. And again, it does beg the question, what do we stand for? And how do we make that happen as a community?
Thank you. Thank you for that. And Morgan, tell our listeners how they can get involved, both on chilly days when the temperature drops below 32 degrees and the other days when it, say, is too hot or when it's nice and comfortable outside. Break it down for us.
Yeah. So if you head on over to House Great Falls on Facebook, we have a sign up link, so you can sign up to volunteer. As we work towards the tiny home community, we'll be starting construction of a model to use as demonstration and gain support. So we'll be looking for people to help us with construction and learn as we go. So,
and where might we see that model other than on Facebook? Will we see that model perhaps elsewhere in the public space?
Yes. We'll be hopefully taking it through the parades and...
as in the July 4th parade?
Yeah.
Oh, how cool. That'll be fun to see a model tiny home going down Main or Central Avenue in Great Falls.
Yeah.
And Carrie, what's your suggestion? Anything we can do on a weekly basis?
I have lots of suggestions.
All right, give us your top three.
Okay.
Because we're running short of time.
Okay, first of all, know your elected officials and know what they stand for and vote appropriately. Secondly, come to Helping Hands at First English and volunteer. Get to know some of the people who are your neighbors. And
What hours would that be that they can do that?
We are open every Saturday from 1 to 3 to give out food, and volunteers can come as early as 12 to get set up.
And if folks don't know exactly where that is, what's the street address?
First English is located at 726 2nd Avenue North, right in downtown Great Falls. We share a back parking lot with Howard's Pizza downtown, so people always know that one if they don't know where the church was. And again, you know, David, it does come back to me for just standing up for what you believe in, walking the walk. And I would be completely remiss if I did not say, if I did not talk about what recently has happened at Helping Hands. First English Lutheran had been a church church here in Great Falls for 118 years. And sadly, it closed this late fall in 2023. People are just not going to church quite as much anymore, especially some of the old traditional churches. And talk about, you know, standing up for what you believe in. The congregation at First English gifted the property to the Ministry of Helping Hands so that the values and the love that had been there at First English could continue on through the ministry. So I had to mention that because it's just a great example of what can you do to help. They really did a lot for us, and we were able to expand and provide more services and in a much more comfortable space. We're not outside anymore, so that's especially nice.
So will there be any form of official or ceremonial handover of the space to Helping Hands that we could attend?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, David. Yes, in fact, on Thursday, April 4th, we are having a ribbon-cutting ceremony at Helping Hands, located at the old First English Lutheran Church, just to mark the reopening of that old ministry there and acknowledge, you know, what has happened in that space and the changes that are going on there now.
And it's Come As You Are?
Come As You Are. Be comfortable. Yeah, there will probably be cookies and coffee. And in addition to the ribbon cutting, I would love to give a little tour just so people can get a you know, visual on what we're doing down there and walk people through the space.
And repeat the time?
Next Thursday, April 4th at 5:30.
5:30. Mm-hmm. And you will, of course, be adding that to the Electron.
Oh, well, of course.
as a community service and fundraising event that is kid-friendly.
Yes, for
sure. We have all those categories.
Great, great.
Morgan, any final thoughts from you about how, other than writing checks to help with the new effort, that people can get involved, and what days of the week and what times?
Yeah, so if you haven't signed up or haven't followed us on Facebook, do that, and we send out links for volunteer opportunities, and we'll keep everybody posted about our activities. So
start on Facebook.
Yep.
Go to Housed Great Falls, sign up or like the page, mm-hmm. and you'll be reaching out and contacting folks that do that.
Yep.
And what about websites for Helping Hands?
We are currently working on that website, but it should be up and running pretty soon. So within the next few weeks, I would look for that.
Which domain will you be inhabiting when you're on the web?
I would just search Helping Hands, Great Falls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we should probably come up there. We also do have a Facebook page that doesn't get updated as often as it should, because we're usually out helping folks. But yeah, definitely look us up. But come also to the ribbon cutting, because it's just good to be on site and see what's actually happening.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Thank you so much, Morgan. It's been a real pleasure having you in the studio. And with luck, we will start to see the needle move on this one over a very short period of time.
Thanks so much, David. This conversation and just knowing that there are so many people in Great Falls who care really keeps me hopeful. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
This is David Saslov, Voices and Views V2.0 on KGPR, 89.9 FM on your radio dial. Join us every Tuesday for Talk Tuesday, and we will see you next time. Thank you so much.